Today I'm joined once again by Connie Fogel, the leader of the Canadian Action Party. Connie Fogel, thank you for joining me once again on the Corbett Report.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I'm always pleased to talk to you.
All right, excellent. Well, could you start, maybe for my listeners who are hearing you for the first time, just by introducing about yourself and your background, and then get into how you became a part of the Canadian Action Party.
All right. Well, I'm a lawyer by profession and a teacher. I was a teacher by profession as well. I'm retired from both. I've lived my entire life very aware and concerned about, you know, the affairs, like the community affairs, my town, my province, my country, my world, and being an activist all of my life, basically been more involved at some times than at others, depending on other things going on in my life, my personal life. And I was very active I've held elected positions in the city of Vancouver. I was very active in a community group called the Defense of Canadian Liberty Committee, which was a national non-governmental organization to deal with the loss of our sovereignty, such as it was when we were fighting globalization before the incident of 9/11. 911 in the States. And so I was very familiar with the process as a result of my experience there, my activism there. I've been around the world in various marches and protests, and so I kind of really had a handle on what the globalizers were doing, and so that when the 9/11 event happened, I right off the bat, I figured something's wrong here. This is other than what it seems. And by that time, let's see, by 1997, which is preceding, of course, the 9/11 event, the Canadian Action Party was formed. And I had been working on the area against globalization for some time already. And when I was approached to run in the party and be a part of the party, at that time the party's primary focus, almost entire focus, was on monetary reform, which again, at that time, I didn't understand money and its process and its power. Well, I soon learned, and I realized that it's at the core of all the globalization issues. And so I was able to go into the Canadian Action Party, learn about the power and control of money, and learn about how globalization issues were connected. And that's what the Canadian Action Party did. Its focus was on those two issues primarily, along with electoral reform. I was the president fairly soon after I joined the party, and then I became the leader in 2004 when the founding leader stepped down. And our party has been a voice in Canada, a political voice, that is the only voice that has taken a very clear, strong position against the forces of globalization. We don't nip at it at its heels or around its corners. We go to its core and identify what needs to be done. If you're really serious, you can't tinker with it. You can't love, even the parties who are closest to us, they say they're anti-globalization, but all they're going to do is the language is to renegotiate NAFTA, when we now know that the North American Free Trade Agreement was the foundation document for the unification of North America in the North American Union that's in process, and that the intention is to model everything in North America as happened in the European Union, and ultimately moving to some area in the world having the full domination of the world in one world power, all run out of the United Nations. So it all has come together for me over the years in what I've been watching and following and dealing with. And I've been fortunate in these years that I've been with the Canadian Action Party to be able to be a voice, to be able to talk about the things that bother me, that worry me, to express my attitudes, my views, my interpretations. And I'm grateful to the party for that particular opportunity. Although I was doing it with the Defense of Canadian Liberty Committee, it's a different venue, and the Canadian Action Party has been the legal, justifiable systems entity, part of the formal structure of our country, and as a result, a very important and legitimate focus.
Well, absolutely. You make a number of important points there, and I think one of them is that, yes, the Canadian Action Party is one of the only parties out there with a clear and decisive stance against the forces of globalization. And you mentioned that when you joined the party, it was a party that was mostly focused on monetary reform. And now, of course, it deals with a wider range of issues. I'm wondering, could you speak to how the Canadian Action Party transformed over the years and how perhaps you've had an influence on the party as well?
Well, I suppose I've had an influence in terms of moving it more quickly to connecting the dots between monetary reform, the need for understanding the power of money, where it's created and who controls it, because what the financial rulers, the elite of the world, say, and there have been quotes to this effect from various sources, one is a Rockefeller quote, another Rockefeller or Rothschild, that just give me the control of the creation and issuance of my money, and I don't care at all which party is in government or who's in government, because that's as far as it went, but the point was governments have no real authority over anything in the significant decision-making of their nation if they don't have control over the creation and issuance of their money. And these financial leaders of the world know this, and they've managed to get most of the world to abandon, most of the nations of the world to abandon that authority and that power. And as a result, they have no authority. And that's the worst thing that's happened to the European Union, for instance. They don't really have, the nations don't really have any independent control of anything of significance anymore. It's all basically done in Brussels by administrators. And, you know, it's so big now that you can't go back to the core people. You can't say, for example, in Canada, we used to be able to say to the United States when they went off to a war, you know, an aggressive act, invading some country, we'd say, no, we don't really think that's the way to go. We don't want to do it. We're not going to do it. We've done that in our past. We don't anymore. We are now tied totally with the United States, and that's not because of the money issue, but it's because of the globalization issues. But the money issue is coming. They've got trouble with their Federal Reserve situation. Our Bank of Canada has not been used since the mid-70s with the power that it has, so we've abandoned that. And the decision-making of the parliamentary elected people really has been pretty seriously emasculated. I'm sort of straying from the question about the money because they're so interconnected. But the point about the money is to understand that that's where the authority and the control lies. When you have that power, you can say to anybody, you jump my hoop. And we all know that he who pays the piper calls the tune. That's an old saying we all know. But it is very, very true. And so that was Paul Hellyer's baby when he founded this party. He'd been looking at this for years and years and years, and he was a parliamentarian for all of his adult life, had been Deputy Prime Minister of Canada, held significant cabinet posts in Canada, had been watching this issue about the power of money for many years. We've had parties in Canada that were monetary reform-oriented, and they would some of them had representatives in Parliament, and they would talk about it. So he knew there was something there, and eventually he moved into that forefront completely himself. And he wasn't really paying the kind of attention to the globalization process that I was. I was following the various international agreements that were going on around the world, from whether it's from NAFTA or to the Multilateral Agreement on Investments or to other international investments that were all being connected. And they were erupting all over the world, have been for a long time, and still are. And I was meeting the activists, anti-globalizers around the world, and there was a split amongst those, between those who said, we don't want to be part of it at all, to those who said, we want to be part of it so we can humanize it. And that's the stupidity. And of course, in Canada, we have, most people are on that humanizing concept, thinking that they can humanize globalization. Well, you can't. They're totally different kinds of things. So when I came into the party, that was my whole bent. My understanding was about the globalization process. And then when I learned about the money, when I came in, I said to Paul at the time, I said, look, I'm so totally dominated by my interest and my activity in the anti-globalization thing. I need to be able to talk about that in the party. I need to be able to raise those issues. So if you say I can only talk about it just in terms of monetary reform, then that's a problem for me. I need to connect the dots and I need to raise them. And he said, not a problem. Do that. And then, as a result of my continued writings and his then paying more direct attention to connecting the dots, he began writing full force and frontal attacks, connecting the two, and his work was really groundbreaking, and he's got a number of books on it, and they've been useful tools within our country and elsewhere, wherever they've been picked up.
So then why do you think Mr. Hellyer reached out to you in the first place?
Well, he himself didn't. It was people that he knew. The party had been formed just a few months before people began approaching me, and there were people in the Vancouver area who knew me, who were part of the founding members of the Canadian Action Party because of their interest in monetary reform. Somehow we had connections. We knew each other because of other things. And they talked to Paul about me and asked Paul, and they themselves talked to me in trying to get me interested in the party. And I was already politically active locally at the city level and running in various campaigns and didn't know if, you know, I wanted to take on the level of the national level. And so there were discussions back and forth, and then the people who knew me here talked to Paul and had him meet with me when he came out here for something rather. So I met with him, and that's the way it, and then it went on from there. He was just following up leads from somebody else.
So, Ms. Fogel, I understand that as of the national convention in later this August in Ottawa, you will be stepping down as the leader of the Canadian Action Party. Could you tell us a little bit about your decision to do that and what it means for the future of this party?
Well, it's tough work, and I've been at it now. I've been leader for 4 years. Been a party since 97, and it takes being in active politics, even though I haven't been elected at that level, at the national level, nor do we have anybody elected at the national level, still you're doing a lot of work, and it takes away from your personal life. Quite frankly, I want to have more of a personal life. That's just clearly there. And we have built the party that it took me a long time when I took over to have to reestablish it, because there was, at the time when Paul left, there had been an effort to join with other political groupings and political parties in Canada to try to create one big party, because so many people, there are a lot of people who are similarly inclined, but the votes get divided because somebody will go to the Green Party or to the NDP Party or to the Communist Party or to Christian Heritage Party. These are all parties that have that do now talk about what we're talking about, although when we first started, I can tell you that both the NDP and the Greens in particular were extremely hostile to us, calling us anti-Semitic because we dared to talk about the creation of money. It was bizarre. But since that time, those parties have begun to pay attention to us because we've been writing, particularly mostly me, been doing a lot of writing. We have an excellent website. A lot of information gets there that nobody else would put up anywhere, but that a lot of people know about and want to hear about and like to hear and are grateful to hear. And that includes a lot of the supporters from the Green Party, from the NDP, from the Liberals, from the Conservatives, from whoever, the Christian Heritage Party, but in particular the Greens and the NDP, who are closer in alignment to a lot of the kinds of people who support us. Their members can't break away from them. They like what we say, and their members go to their leadership and say, you know, we want you to go this direction. This is what the CAP is saying. So our presence has been the classical, traditional expression in Canada, in the way of Canadian politics, whereby a small party is a voice for the thinking of a lot of other people that isn't being expressed someplace else. And so the people from the parties who just can't break away from the loyalty of the NDP or can't break away from the loyalty of the Greens will go there, and they've put pressure on their leaders, and indeed their leaders are now picking up our language. And in some cases, some of their people say, well, we're no different. You're just like us. We're saying the same thing. And when we get on the platform during a campaign, during an election, the public out there is totally confused because it seems like the candidates sound alike. And I have to say that sometimes the candidates are not smart enough or wise enough or well enough developed to understand the distinctions. And the distinction finally in the bottom line is ultimately, what will you finally really do? Canadian Action Party says, we know we must abrogate NAFTA, completely get out of it, say no to it, completely out, totally, 100%. We have to totally use the Bank of Canada, the maximum that we can manage to do from any point of time. None of the other parties take that clear line. They don't take that clear line, and so that's why our viability remains important. But back to your question about why, what's happening that's making me feel like it's comfortable for me to leave now, is I see that in these years, those other parties have begun to pick up our message. We're a force, even though we're so small and we don't have anybody elected. We clearly, in the mindset, the mentality of the thinking electorate, we're a presence and we matter, and we have an impact on those other parties. And we have a lot of new young people, a lot of candidate people wanting to be candidates. And I'm thinking that it's the party's well enough along now and well enough developed, and there are enough other people coming along with strong ability to express things clearly, like I've been doing, that it doesn't have to be me. You see, I mean, there's never, although I'm totally a believer in leadership. I understand there has to be leadership. I understand that there never have been more than a few significant leaders from time to time wherever. I understand that. You can point to them in history. By the same token, I also understand totally that in times of crisis, the most unexpected sources of leadership can emerge. I'm not suggesting we're in a time of crisis right now, but what I am suggesting is that there is a potential for great leadership all around us all the time, and there needs to be opportunity for that leadership to emerge. So what I'm saying is I don't see myself as a one and only something. Can't be that way in life, in history, and in reality. And I think it's maybe time for me to go to let some of these other people come along. I think my message is out there. It will remain out there. I'm going to make a jump. And then another thing that happens in parties once they kind of get established, get going, is and it happens in every institution and in every organization, you get some groups, some individuals who are divisive and do some undermining and internal sabotage and internal attack. That has begun to happen in CAP, and that's a sign of our growth. But I think that the leadership that's here knows how to deal with it and knows just carry on the straight, clear focus and not allow yourself to be sidetracked. So that's another message to me. Well, that maybe it's time for me to go. People are using my presence as an excuse to do whatever their criticism is. And so I'm going. I think it's probably time. Time maybe for the party and time maybe for me personally.
Well, given that the Canadian Action Party is finding a growing audience among the Canadian electorate and is having more of an effect on Canadian politics, where do you see the party going from here, and what type of leader do you think will have the greatest effect to continue spreading the Canadian Action Party's message?
Well, those are very hard questions, and let me just say this. One of the things that's happening in Canada is that our existing politicians, the government, coming from all the politicians from all parties, support the government's move, which restricts the opportunity of the small parties to survive for this voice that we have been. It puts so many roadblocks in our way. They just keep growing, and most of them are financial, but a lot of them are administrative. It's clear, and we have a representative who sits on the all-party committee that meets with Elections Canada, and we know from feedback, reporting back from him, that it is the current government's intention, and it has the support of every party that's there, to do everything possible to continue that attack on the small parties. They don't want this alternate voice. They don't want this criticism out here, and so they're basically killing us, and they have some very significant rules now in place that almost will be successful in killing us. Those rules include severe limits on financial contributions. Nobody can donate more than $1,100 per month, and it has to be from an individual. It can't be a corporation or a union. They have a new rule now, it's not completely in effect, but it will be within the next few months, whereby if you borrow money or somebody lends money to you as a party, that it has to bear interest, and I think the new rules are going to be, you're not even going to be allowed to borrow it from someone who's not a financial institute. So go back to the point about, who controls money, and the financial institutions demanding, they'd be at the core of this, commanding that they be the ones, that if there's any money lent to parties, they're the only ones that should do it. And that's a big issue for us. The party, the government eliminated the capacity of any individual to be a major benefactor to a small party to give millions of dollars as benefactors have. The Green Party started that way, the Canadian Action Party started that way, the Communist Party started that way. People can leave money via their estate, and it's not taken away yet. But we can't have the big benefactors, so we're totally dependent on these tiny little contributions. And we have been dependent on loans from our party members, especially during time of election, because every candidate who runs has to put up $1,000 to be a candidate. Probably over half of our people don't have the funds, and so they've borrowed it from the Canadian Action Party. We do not have a pot of money sitting in a corner. We get money on a day-by-day basis and survive by the skin of our teeth. And we have totally been dependent on a benefactor lending us money interest-free so that we could lend the money to the candidates. And when there have been by-elections, we have had other members lend the $1,000 to the candidate. When the candidate finishes his campaign and does all his paperwork properly, Elections Canada sends that money back, and then we return the money to the person that lent it to us. That is now becoming something we're not going to be able to do. So it's a major blow, a major, major blow to us. We can't receive money from unions. We can't receive money from corporations. Like, small businesses aren't allowed to give money to us as small people. So all of that impacts on the direction of CAP. It may be that the small parties are not going to be able to survive, and it may be that the parties are going to have to move towards different kinds of mobilization of people. I don't have the answer completely yet. It does speak to your issue of what kind of a leader. That's a significant issue. It's an important issue. We do not have somebody yet that's been selected. We have a couple of people who seem to be well-qualified and competent people who will be presenting their names at the convention. And we have a few others as well who would be maybe not as high profile or not as much resource behind them. We do have some. How they will be, history will tell. They don't have the kind of experience that I had, but we'll have to live with what is there. I'm confident. I think the leadership is there, and I think that the people I know that I'm talking to, they're strong-minded. They're fighters. They can dig in. A leader must be someone who can, you know, take the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, as Shakespeare had said, not in that particular context, but you have to be able to receive the blows, and you have to be able to suffer the blows and withstand the blows and carry on. That's part of what being a leader of a party is. Like, being a leader of a party is not a glory job. In the big parties, it kind of is, from what you can see on the surface, but they're all driven by backroom boys, and the leaders in those parties have a particular ideology, and they can be tough, and if they're not tough, they don't survive either. So you do have to have a certain kind of a toughness, a certain kind of a thick skin. You have to know how to be hit and to be damaged, but carry on. I've done that. I've been there as a lawyer. I was an advocate in court, and you as a lawyer, defending people, you stand against all the resources of the state. You're the only one with your client. And so I've lived that and known that in my professional work. So I've had the experience of how to function that way. And we have good people who maybe don't have that stomach yet, and they'll learn it. They will learn it. They have to learn it. It's just like being, we are in, the whole world is in a form of war. The citizens of the world are being attacked. In a traditional kind of war, the people on the battlefield, the colonels, the sergeants, whatever, they could be killed up in front, and somebody, an infantry man from behind, was pushed fast up to the front and had to assert leadership and direct people. And you know, over and over and over again, those little people who appeared to be non-entities came forward, and the greatness inside them, the goodness, the strength, emerged because it had to. I'm trusting the same thing will happen here, because we are in a war. And that's another something most people won't say. I say it, I acknowledge it, I mean most political parties. And so the people, whether they're in actual leadership positions and formal administrative positions in CAP, or whether they're members that are fighting, or whether they're candidates, they have to reach that caliber of understanding, otherwise they're no good to themselves or to to the party or to the world at large in a movement of this kind of nature that has a political base. It's a tough job. It's especially running in this kind of a party where we're the only voice attacking the real power of the world. You have to learn how to handle all the forms of attack that there will be on you from inside meddling to outside attack. It's all around you. And yeah, it's not easy. But anybody coming to this kind of a party and to this kind of a movement comes here because they know this is the kind of fight there has to be.
So can you talk about the convention process and the nomination process itself?
At this particular convention in August is not the convention that will select the new leader. The executive has already selected a person who's going to be the interim leader, and that person comes from the existing executive, and that person will stand to carry on the party, because there has to be a leader there, until the full process of the leadership selection occurs. The leadership process can be by way of convention. It can happen at our national convention, the one that's happening, but the executive decided they were not going to do it this time. They decided they didn't think they were ready enough, that there was enough information out, enough of a draw of people to try to apply. So they're not going to do it at this convention. So this executive has the choice to set down another convention, which must be done by the end of November. Their deadline, according to the date of my notice of my resignation. And so it has to be by November. But they don't have to do it by convention. They can also do it by way of national ballot amongst our members, by mail vote. That's possible, and the national executive will decide that. The purpose of this convention is because it comes in a time we have to hold our national convention. We're at the deadline for the requirements under Elections Canada for our national convention. So at this convention, a new executive will be chosen. They always are chosen at every convention, and any new policies that have come in, and we have deadlines for that, they will be discussed, debated, and either adopted or rejected. Same thing with some constitutional amendments. So that's the basic process. But the rest of the convention, we also intended that this convention be a time to profile the people who are putting themselves forward as leaders, so these people can stand forward and talk and be seen and heard by the members who attend. And I think we hope to have this videotaped so it can be seen, be put on our website and be seen by all of our members and public at large, I suppose, or we may have a special session only place only for members. So that's a beginning process to help the new people to be profiled and help the members decide which of those who come forward they do prefer. That's basically what we're doing at this convention. The convention itself, we're hoping that all of them will come, but even if they don't all come, that who have already announced they're coming, it's not mandatory for them to be there. It's just they'll have less exposure. And it could be that there will be other people than the names we already have who do come forward. The executive has not yet put a deadline on the cutoff date for applications to become the leader. And you understand, it's not the executive who's going to choose the national leader. It's the membership, either by way of a convention or by mail. My preference would be by mail so that every member gets to vote on it, because not everybody can get to a convention.
Well, it seems this is a time of great flux for the party, but also a time of great opportunity, as you point out. But stepping back for a moment, on a more philosophical note, I was wondering about the politics of the Canadian Action Party, and I know to some extent it's always difficult to apply labels to a movement, but the libertarian philosophy has been gaining ground throughout the world, I think, as part of the anti-globalization movement, as well as the growing awareness of monetary reform policies. And I'm wondering if you can speak to that movement of libertarian, not only the libertarian movement in Canada, but also around the world, and whether you think the Canadian Action Party fits into that description or that label, and what that philosophy might mean to you.
Okay. No, I can't and I won't. I don't know enough about what the libertarian movement is. I mean, we know there's a whole Ron Paul movement. Is that considered a libertarian movement in the United States when he's on a Republican ticket? The reason I'm saying no is because it's been important for me in the time I've been around to deal with issues. And I came to this party because I was so unhappy with the other options that were available to me at an electoral level. And even at a non-governmental level, I wasn't happy with what any of the other non-governmental organizations who were in the globalization movement were doing. They were not clear enough in terms of what the final to-do is. They talk about all the wrongs, but they didn't have a clear political position. Their position is let the non-governmental organizations run the world. And I say, no, not at all. That's not accountable. They're not elected. We can't get rid of them. We've taken a clear position on issues. I've been very clear on issues. And over all my years of political exposure, this very question you're asking gets put to me. And I've been on the hot seat before editorial panels of significant newspapers and small newspapers and telephone calls and show hosts. And I honestly can't answer the question because, you know what? None of the traditional labels address the issues of the world today the way I see them need to be addressed. There's not much difference between any of them. And so I don't think that the labels help us anymore. So I can only say what I've had to do and what I've encouraged any caller to do, anybody who's ever asked me any questions, is to find out what people are going to do. What is that party going to do on this issue? What are they actually really going to do? And I don't care what the party is called, and it doesn't have to be the Canadian Action Party. It can be any party that would do the things that I want to be done and that I, as leader, have set the direction of CAP, following the direction of Paul Hellyer, that we want to be done. If any other party in this country, and we've actually gone through the process of that under Paul Hellyer, where we tried to unite with some other parties and say, look, we're so close, can we come together, the Green Party, the NDP, some progressives from the Liberals, some progressives, we call them progressives, I use the word progressive, maybe I'm putting a label there, people from the NDP or from the Liberal Party or the Conservative Party who agree with the things we're saying, can we not all come together and can we not forge a force and take on a different name and call ourselves a united party of some kind? And can we not all go forward on three issues? We want the end to globalization. We're opposed to globalization. We understand the process of globalization and that it's an evil thing. And we want a recognition and an implementation of the power and the control of money in the hands of the people through their elected governments, like our National Bank or the Bank of Canada. We want it to be used for its power. And can we not institute an electoral reform system that truly is accountable to the people and allows the people to pull back the representatives when they betray them or don't follow through? We tried that for 2 years or 3 years in CAP and got nowhere. We couldn't get anybody to do it. So we had to, when I became the leader, that's where we were at. And the party said, no, we're not going to fold, even though that effort didn't win, even though we failed on that, because there is no other voice prepared to do that. And so when you say to me, where do I put us in the political sphere? Paul Hellyer used the word, we're in the radical center. To me, all of that is meaningless. For instance, I was just at a Freedom 21 conference speaking in Texas a few weeks ago. And that is, that was a conference that was presenting speakers and having people present who represented in many ways what in the past would have been called the very conservative element of the United States. They're the patriots of the United States. They're the ones who are concerned with the sovereignty of the United States. They're the ones who want the United States to remain United States. They were critical of the Republican Party, critical of the Democratic Party, critical of both the leaders that are currently running. And here I am, and yet one of the groups that are there is the John Birch Society, who in Canada has historically been written off by so many people as being too far to quote the old right, and they would do a lot of things that we wouldn't agree with. Well, I agree, and I was invited down because I have spoken out on things that they like, and that's to say, I want to remain Canadian. And they say they wanted people in the States to hear somebody from another country say they wanted to remain in their own country. In other words, they wanted their people to understand that the people around North America are not scrambling like crazy, rushing to try to become a part of the United States, but that they see a significance in their own sovereignty and their own independence and their own freedom and their own right to make their own decisions. And so ultimately, for me, I'm answering your question by saying the test is, are you going to be left as a citizen with a meaningful capacity to be able to shape the decision of your world? And if your answer cannot be yes, with that that group or that person, then, and you want that, then don't go there. I don't know if that helps.
It's a very succinct answer. So, what does the future hold for Connie Fogle?
Well, you know, there are lots of interesting things going on in the world right now. This battle, this war against all of humanity, remains, well, it's here, but I think, in fact, we're not losing that war. And I can be active in that in other ways, and maybe I've made the contribution as much as I can do in where I've been. There are other places to be involved in this movement. There's another whole area that I'm extremely interested in, and since you've asked, I'll tell you. It's the whole area of the failure of disclosure by governments around the world of an extraterrestrial presence and power, its involvement and capacity in our environment. And I want to find out more about that and go there, because if indeed some of the things I'm reading on that are true and they're real, that if it's the case that the significant technological developments of the Earth, including the enormous weapon power, including whatever we can do in space, is all connected to information and communications that come from elsewhere in the universe, that they're a part of that, then I want to know that. And I think any thinking human being must want to know that. If you just go back to the time on Earth when the Earth was considered to be flat, and if you dared to say otherwise, you were burned at the stake. Or if you were dared to talk about the Earth not being the center of the universe, you were burned at the stake. And so how can it be that we know there is this complex universe out there, absolute, significant, enormous, unending universe, and that this little tiny Earth would be the only thing with intelligence? To me, that's nonsensical. So I want to go there. I want to find out more. I want to learn. As long as I'm alive, I want to learn. And I firmly believe that the secret to freedom of the individual and of anything else in the world is knowledge and information. And if you just think about it a minute, think about the technological advantage we've had since the Internet. When the knowledge has been able to get around the Earth because of the Internet, people have become more aware of their world, and we've been able to fight back and resist and fight this global enemy. And of course, the other efforts to try to stifle that communication, but that's knowledge, that's a knowledge network, that's the power, there's power in that knowledge. I'm excited about life, I'm excited about knowledge, I'm excited about the fact that there are more things out there for me to explore and to think about and to learn. And you know what? If there's that kind of power out there, I want to be a part of knowing about it. I want to experience, the technology and the freedom that it's supposed to, that I'm reading can be available to humanity. And maybe, in fact, I mean, if you really get into all the stuff that's happening environmentally and you really get into understanding what the financial global powers are doing and they're doing to the environment and how they're going to the little guy and saying, you little guy, you got to suffer. You got to cut back on the amount of gas you use and the amount of heat you put in your home, and you've got to pay carbon taxes while we continue to pollute the Earth and use everything up. And they fool the people, trick the people over and over and over. And so I'm saying I want to know more about all those areas. And I don't want to live, I don't want to live in slavery. I don't want to live without knowledge. I want to be free.
So where can people go to find out more information about the Canadian Action Party?
Well, CanadianActionParty.ca, www.CanadianActionParty.ca is our website. And it's a good website. There's stuff on there that you don't find anywhere else. There's even, I think, some very slight references to the topic I just last referred to. I've received a lot of criticism from daring to go there at all, from people who say that you'd be just dismissed as wing nut kind of thing. Well, look what happened to the wing nuts when the Earth was considered flat. And if I'm one of those, then that's fine. I'm not going to accept that the Earth is flat. So they can go there to our website, find that information. They could also go to a website called Disclosure Project, www.disclosureproject, and learn more about what I'm talking about. There's all sorts of information out there. People have to be open. I say to people, make up your own mind. I have my views. I transmit my information. I do my study, my analysis. I put it out there. You don't have to believe what I say or take what I say or function on what I say, but think. All I want, all my role has been, in my view, in the years I've been here, is to learn, to analyze, and to transmit that information and encourage people to study it and form their own views on the basis of informed information.
All right. Well, Ms. Fogel, thank you very much for joining us today.
Good. Thank you.